turn away at the western gate. An untamed Modal Zusha story, written by Mahlakai and read by Calicuria. This story features no pairing, has been rated for audiences teen and up, and has been tagged, no archive warnings apply. Summary. Cast out of the cloud recesses in secrecy following Ching Hanjun's death, the woman who was once Madame Lan makes her way across the lands as she mourns the loss of her sons. In Yiling, she finds a small child, himself missing his parents. Can Liu Mehui help little Wei Ying when she can't even help herself? Reader's notes. I am doing my best. I have consulted pronunciation guides, including by Lunatique on Dreamwidth and Summer Tea on Twitter. Many thanks to both of them. I am a native English speaker. I am definitely still making mistakes. I am very sorry. I'm doing my best. This was recorded for Coon Time as part of Summer Podfix Swap 2023. I climb the western tower in silence, the moon like a sickle. Clear autumn is locked in the deep courtyard, where a wutong tree stands lonely. Sorrowful parting has cut, but not severed, our ties. My mind is still wild. Separation is just like a taste in head and heart. I climb the western tower in silence, Joy of Meeting, by Li Yu. Liu Mehui, reluctant wife to the Gusulan sect leader, sits in the confined dark cage of her room, her prison silent around her. Cold hangs outside as the world holds its breath. Waiting. Waiting. Qi Hengzhen lays dying, and when the Gusulan sect leader takes his last breath, her husband, her jailer, hers shall surely not be far behind. The Lan elders have long memories. Once Qing Hengjin's sword no longer stands between them and her throat, Liu Mehui cannot expect to live. She wishes she didn't care. She wishes that her years in solitude could have done something to remove from her all earthly cares. But instead, every day locked away from the world, from the sky, from her sons, digs into her flesh like nails, and all she can do is to rage as silent as the night outside. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not justice. But that never mattered. Not to the Lan elders, who are as complicit as the man Liu Mehui killed. Justice is not murder. An executioner does not lay bare their own neck for taking a complicit life. It never mattered. Liu Mehui was dead from the moment her sword sliced through the air. Some days, she wishes that she had planted her sword in the dirt and run from Qing Hengzhen, run from the cultivation world. It's over now. When Lan Qiren brought word the month before that Qing Hengzhen lay dying, Liu Mehui knew it was a warning. As her husband's life goes, so does her own. And so, on that last beautiful day with her children, Liu Mehui held the boys close to her, listened to Lan Huan's delighted burble as he spoke of his friends, as Lan Zhan folded against her with quiet, vibrating intensity. Her two wonderful sons, the only light left in her life, made that much more precious by how quickly Lan Qiren always came to take them away from her. She knew it was the last day she would ever see them. Once Qing Hengzhen dies, no mercy will be spared to the murderer of a Lan elder. Liu Mehui runs her fingers over the long sash at her waist. For years, the elders have made sure that her clothing is of the finest silks, of the most extravagant and longest cuts, materials well suited for a murderer to hang herself in a final show of remorse. Liu Mehui will never kill herself. They want her dead. They can have her blood spray red across their pure white robes. Carefully, Liu Mehui balls her hands in her robe. She rages, silent as the owl flying in the night. What she did, although 7 years before, was justice. What is done to her, here, is not. Outside, the sound of a foot against the gravel. Liu Mehui's breath stills. Another footstep, the shift of the gravel on the path almost imperceptible. It cannot be her husband, the only one who ever dared approach her prison in the night. Lan Chiren's last word of his brother's condition was of a wasting illness, leaving Qinghen Zhen unable to walk, unable to see, his long seclusion broken by the doctors. Liu Mehui breathes out. She waits. If they come for her here, now, she will fight. That will be justice. A foot on the stairs, then the door of her house slides open. She recognizes the shape of her husband's younger brother, the scholar forced into leadership, into de facto fatherhood, by her husband's choices. The faintest light outside illuminates Lan Chiren's features and the sword he holds sheathed in his hand. Lan Chiren never carries a sword within the clad recesses. Liu Mehui feels the corner of her mouth twist. So, the elders have sent Lan Chiren to take their vengeance. For a long time, neither of them move. Then, Lan Chiren finally steps into the Qingxia.
"My brother," he says, words catching, "is dead."
Liu Mehui searches for grief in her heart. She finds none.
"Now..."
Lan Chiren stops. He turns to look over his shoulder, then steps more fully into the house, closing the door after him. Liu Mehui still does not move. She will not be complicit in her own death. With a pulse of spiritual energy, Lan Chiren lights the lamp on the table, the flame flaring low and yellow. In the illumination, Lan Chiren is haggard, worn, grief wearing at him like water against stone. He stares at her for a long moment. Then he moves, tossing the sword, still sheathed, across the room. Without thinking, Liu Mehui reaches out to catch it. Warmth and power burst through her as her golden core flares in recognition of her own almost forgotten sword. In an instant, Liu Mehui is on her feet, heart in her mouth, unsheathing the blade in disbelief. It is her sword, Winter's Grace, as powerful and perfect as the day Qinghen Zhen wrested it from her grasp as he pulled her to her knees to make the marriage vows. She has spent years mourning the sword, and now she has it back.
"My brother is dead,"
Lan Chiren repeats. Liu Mehui slowly slides her blade back into the sheath. She should ask after her children, ensure that Lan Huan and Lan Zhan are safe. But instead, she just stares. Lan Chiren turns from her. He's never been good at looking her in the eye.
"In preparation to help Lan Huan ascend to his place as the next leader of the sect, I was given access to all records in the Hall of Memories."
He looks intently at the lamp.
"The records sealed by my brother."
The question forms on her lips as to when Qinghen Zhen would have gotten around to sealing any records between returning to Clad Recesses, flinging her into her elegant prison, and sealing himself up in seclusion. But she has not spoken since that last beautiful day with her children. She swore that her last words in the land of the living would be to her sons, but now... She forces the words out, each feeling like broken rock against her throat. "What records?" Lan Chiren can't help but look at her, his eyes jerking down to her sword.
"The records of what?"
There's an anger growing on his face, almost pushing away the grief.
"Of what the one whom you killed, what he did before."
A flame flickers in Liu Mehui's chest, spooling out into her belly and her limbs, the fire-hot burn of rage and anger so long denied. You didn't know. It's not a question, but it should be. You didn't know what he did. Lan Xiran gives one quick shake of his head.
My brother concealed any word of his teachers.
He stops, swallows.
Crimes.
The world fractures under Liu Mehui's feet. She thought Lan Xiran knew. She thought they all knew what depravities Lan Ji had conducted, that they were all like her husband in turning their heads, hiding their eyes from the truth, twisting her act from execution to murder. But now Lan Xiran stands before her, and her own sword pulses warm in her hand. Uphold the value of justice, she says, the words from the Lan Wall of Disciplines falling from her mouth like blood. Shoulder the weight of morality.
You killed my brother's teacher!
Lan Xiran lashes out, grief contorting his face.
And I would do it again!
She throws back, hand tight on her sword. Lan Xiran turns away, his hands curled in on themselves.
Qingheng Zhen cannot have been the only one to know, he says, low, dry, and hard. Even as my brother lay in his sickbed, the elder spoke of what they would do with you once he...
He swallows again. And yet, Liu Mehui presses, anger hot in her guts, when you thought my actions murder, you would have stood aside to let them at me. Lan Xiran is still for a long time. Finally, he nods.
They will still come for you, he says. You must leave.
Her heart flickers.
Leave?
Lan Xiran turns around, putting his back to her. He's no warrior. She could cut him down with her sword, run across the cloud recesses, take her boys and run and...
You are no longer the sect leader's wife. In the morning, the elders will come to seek justice for the one who died at your hand.
Lan Xiran walks across the room.
If you are here when they arrive, you will die.
Liu Mehui blinks, trying to understand what is happening. It's too much, too soon. She spent weeks staring her own death in the face, trying to figure out how to say goodbye to her life, and now Lan Xiran is telling her to walk away. Won't they come after me? She asks.
No.
Lan Xiran hesitates.
Not if I tell them that you are dead.
Liu Mehui looks around the dark Jingxi. This might be the most surprising thing of them all. Lan Xiran, are you going to lie to your clan elders? Lan Xiran turns around, his eyes flinty.
Yes,
he says, flinching even as the word leaves his lips.
Falsehood and deception are forbidden, but far more important is the precept to be just and to be ethical. I now believe that what happened to you was not justice.
He reaches into his sleeve and pulls out a Qiankun pouch. It flies across the room, much as her sword did. She catches it without thinking.
I cannot change that.
Liu Mehui hefts the pouch. It's heavy, worryingly so. What's this?
Money. Clothes. Food.
Lan Xiran clasps his hands behind his back.
What you will need once you leave the cloud recesses.
Slowly, Liu Mehui stows the pouch in her sleeve. She has so many questions, churning in her mind below the feeling of dread. Why dread? Why are you doing this? Liu Mehui asks. Lan Xiran stands as straight as he can.
My brother is dead. Lan Huan is not even 7 years old. I will serve in his stead as acting sect leader, and as such I make the choices for what is best for the Gusulam.
So, Liu Mehui says, still feeling that strange dread. You tell me that I'm to leave Cloud Recesses, but what will you tell the elders? They're not going to believe my death without proof. Lan Xiran's chin goes up.
When I came to tell you of my brother's death, you were overcome with such grief and remorse that you pushed past me, made your way to the outer boundary of the clad recesses where the wall is low, and flung yourself over it into the raging river below.
He hesitates around the lies of his own creation.
I was unable to raise the alarm before I went after you, and was unable to intercede to save you from going into the river.
Liu Mehui thinks about her childhood in Jushan, of learning to swim before she could walk, then pushes that implausibility aside.
And when they don't find my body?
Lan Chiran twitches.
It is spring,
he says finally.
The waters move fast.
Liu Mehui shakes her head. It's a terrible idea. It'll never work.
But if it does...
If it does, Liu Mehui will be free. She'll have to go by another name until the memory of her actions fade into the past. Her sword is not well known in cultivation circles. She'll have to wander as a rogue cultivator, take odd jobs, walk the path alone.
Walk the path alone. The dread coalesces into a bright, sharp point of agony.
Lan Chiran will not let her take the children.
Not when they're the only ones in the direct line to be sect leader.
Not when Lan Chiran shows no interest in marrying, in producing another set of legitimate heirs.
To leave the cloud recesses, Liu Mehui must abandon her children. It was different when she thought they'd just kill her.
But to live in the world, separated from her sons permanently, not even having the brief day with them once a month after they'd been ripped from her breast as infants,
that would be a far crueler punishment than even the Lan elders could make up. Briefly, Liu Mehui wonders if Lan Chiran realizes what his choices will mean.
But she cannot ask to take her sons, little Lan Huan with his sunshine smile, or Lan Zhan, his eager eyes following her everywhere in silence as his brother talks for both of them. She cannot ask.
She will not beg.
She considers, for only a moment, cutting Lan Chiran down where he stands, running across cloud recesses to find her sons. But it is the night of the sect leader's death, and as per tradition, his heirs will be closely watched until succession is confirmed. All she will accomplish is dying on the end of a Lan blade. Even so, it takes every shred of strength in her to keep from flying out of the room. She'll miss them, her beautiful sons. They're going to have to grow up in this place of cold and solitude. Will the mantle of sect leadership steal the light from Lan Huan's eyes? Will Lan Zhan ever grow into his words, or retreat inside himself even further? Terrible things to think about in such small children. Liu Mehui wonders if she'll ever see them again. It takes her a very long time to loosen her grip on her sword.
One moment.
Without waiting for Lan Chiran's permission, Liu Mehui walks over to the small desk where she spends so many of her days, writing letters that only ever lead the Jingsha's smoke. In the small drawer are her greatest treasures, the small animal sketches Lan Huan and Lan Zhan painted with her on their last visit. Lan Huan's tiger is big and round and surprisingly mature for his years. Lan Zhan's rabbits are nearly indecipherable, but he had whispered up at her as he painted, telling her the meaning of every stroke, every spot of ink. She smooths the papers, remembering how Lan Huan laughed at Lan Zhan's serious expression as her youngest son drew the brush over the page with his pudgy fist. The memory is bright in her mind, when she expected to take with her to her death. Now, she'll take it with her as every step carries her further away from her sons.
Liu Mehui, Lan Chiran says, you must go.
Deliberately, Liu Mehui rolls the papers up and places them in her sleeve. Then she walks to the wardrobe, pulls out the never-used winter cloak from within, and dons it. Then, and only then, she holds her head high as she walks to the threshold of the Jingsha, her home, her prison. For the first time in 7 years, she steps outside. The night is dark and still, but she can see the tops of the pine trees overhead, moving against the indigo black of the sky. Her breath catches in her throat. This can't be real. This can't be happening. Mere minutes before, she was preparing for her death, and now she's gaining her freedom and losing her sons at the same time. She takes another step. No hidden guard jumps for her. No one starts in surprise. The only other person there to witness her breaking seclusion is Lan Xiren, who slips around her like a shadow. He strides into the darkness, the white of his robes a beacon in the night. Liu Mehui follows him. She does not look back. For all that Cloud Recesses has been her prison for so many years, Liu Mehui had no idea how large the enclave was. She follows Lan Xiren down a gravel path, then a dirt one, then over forest ground untouched by human feet. The sound of the river reaches them through the darkness, the spring freshet pounding against rock walls. Liu Mehui grew up by the sea. The sound of the spring angry river hurts her ears. Lan Xiren pauses by a section of solid rock in the wall. Without speaking, he traces a sigil with his spiritual energy, then pushes until a small gate appears from under the illusion. As Lan Xiren bends over the wards, Liu Mehui glances back the way they came. This is the furthest she has ever been from her sons. Even on those long days and longer nights of isolation, she always knew that her precious children were nearby. That's at an end, now. Lan Xiren wrestles the gate open. Liu Mehui looks out at the world outside the cloud recesses, the faintest hint of moonlight picking out shadows and shapes on the ground beyond the wall. Lan Xiren clears his throat. You must go. Liu Mehui looks at him for a long moment. She supposes she should say something. Thank him? Demands to know how he could think this might possibly succeed? She wants to say something about the children, but what can she say to the man who raises them? She allows herself to think of her sons. They were always so happy to see her, full of light and life. Lan Xiren can't have done anything to poison their minds against her before. He won't start now. Liu Mehui wonders if she'll ever see her boys again. She hopes so. But in order to achieve that dream, she has to live. To that end, to divert the wrath of the Lan Elders now that Qing Heng Jin is dead, Lan Xiren's scheme of faking her death must succeed. She doesn't know how it'll work, but there are things she can do to add credence to Lan Xiren's plan. With a sigh, she unknots the sash at her waist. What? Lan Xiren splutters, turning so red she can practically see in the darkness. Liu Mehui! Be still, Liu Mehui chides him. If you want the elders to think I'm truly dead, you'll need some proof. She unwinds the length of silk. Soak it in the river and say you found it downstream. Shameless! Lan Xiren snaps, almost as a reflex. Liu Mehui tosses the sash onto a nearby rock, then pulls her overrobe tight. That's the last thing she can think of, the last piece to keep her within the cloud recesses. If she delays, someone with a less developed sense of morality than Lan Xiren might find them and raise the alarm. Still, she hesitates. She knows Lan Xiren will continue to do his duty by Lan Huan and Lan Zhan, but she can't walk away without asking one last thing. What are their courtesy names? Lan Xiren startles enough to look at her. What? Ahuan, Shan Zhan. She swallows. Will she ever have a moment to say those names again? She can't say, she won't say, my husband. And she knows that Qing Heng Jun never laid eyes on his sons, shuttered as he was away from the world. He doesn't deserve the title of father, not even in death. Did anyone give the children courtesy names? Slowly, Lan Xiren nods. Lan Zhan is to be Lan Wanji, and Lan Huan will be known as Lan Xichun. Good names, strong names, for them to grow into. But Liu Mehui thinks of Lan Zhan's round cheeks and his tiny hands, and of Lan Huan's bright smile and his gentle nature. Those lofty names fit ill around the necks of two very young children. It doesn't matter. Liu Mehui's opinion on her children, how they're raised, what they eat, even their birth names, has never mattered. In the end, Liu Mehui returns Lan Qiren's nod. Without another word, she moves toward the gate. She can sense Lan Qiren's eyes on her back as she steps outside the walls of Cloud Recesses. She doesn't look back, not as the sound of the gate closing follows her down the narrow path. It should feel like freedom, to be in the world after 7 long years of captivity. Liu Mehui should celebrate, being alive and free, instead of dead on the end of a Lan Elder's sword. Instead, every step is a weight in her chest. She missed her boys every day of her captivity, after they were ripped from her arms so soon after she gave birth. She lived for their monthly visits, and now that is over. She will never see Lan Huan and Lan Zhan again. If she does, in some distant year once they've grown, she can't tell them who she is. In one night, Lan Huan and Lan Zhan lost both their father and their mother. At least they have Lan Qiren. At least they have their uncle, a man of righteousness and justice, of whom Lan Huan speaks with fondness and love, and to whom Lan Zhan always ran happily to grab his hand as Lan Qiren escorted them away from the Jingxia. Liu Mehui stops in the path to listen to the fury of the river. In the dark, she can't see beyond the edge of the rock face. If she takes a wrong step, she might tumble down the slope and fall into the river indeed. Gripping her sword tight, Liu Mehui begins the long descent from the mountain. She wonders what she's supposed to do now. She's kept her cultivation strong through meditation and exercises, but even so, her legs ache with the walking after so many years of forced inactivity. After years without her sword, could she even fly if she needed to? Will her arms remember how to wield her blade? Will any of it matter if the Lan elders find out about Lan Qiren's duplicity? If word reaches them that Liu Mehui lives, they will come after her. It's been years since home was last in Zhushan. Her parents are long dead, any other family wiped out by the plague sickness that killed so many on the coast, cutting down cultivator and non-cultivator alike. Even before she met Qingheng Zhen, Liu Mehui had no ties, no living family to bind her to the world. And now her children are lost to her as well. Still, some few may still know her if she shows her face in Zhushan or Tingshan, or even further south down the coast. From what she remembers, the Gusulan have friendly ties with the Qinghenye, and she cannot be sure that word will not reach back to Gusu if she heads north. Maybe she'll head west, towards Yingmeng. Years ago, before her imprisonment, Liu Mehui heard that sect leader Zhang and his new wife had not taken to driving rogue cultivators out of their territory, which was more than most. Maybe Liu Mehui will try her luck to the west. And if that doesn't work, Yunmeng is far enough away from Gusu that she'll be able to escape if the Lan elders come looking for her. Liu Mehui pauses by a large pine tree that overhangs the river. The moon is high enough now that she can make out the froth and churn of the water below. The spray is ice cold, water barely melted from its winter snow and ice. Her sons will grow up in these cold hills. Will they be happy? Will they find love? Find peace? Liu Mehui steps back from the edge. She may never know what is to become of her sons. By rights, she should be dead twice over by now. Swallowing down the ache in her throat, Liu Mehui walks on. She came to Cloud Recesses childless, and fate transpires that she leave the same way. For weeks, Liu Mehui travels by night. At first, it's to avoid catching the attention of any Lan or Lan ally, as she's still so close to Gusu. Then, as she draws west past Maling, it's to avoid unwanted attention as a female cultivator traveling on her own. She's done this before. It's second nature to fall back into the patterns of her youth. It's almost as if the last 7 years were only a nightmare. but her long captivity has changed her in ways she didn't expect. It takes too long for her stamina to return, for her arms and her body to remember how to wield her sword against evil. She aches, too, deep inside, behind the pooling of her golden core in her guts. For days, she can't understand. It's not until she happens upon an abandoned shack in the woods, overgrown with decades' disrepair, that the answer comes to her. She pokes around in the ruins, wondering idly what had driven the former occupants away, when she finds a small cradle tucked against the side of one wall. An old sparrow's nest, also abandoned, sits in one corner of the cradle. Liomehwe wonders how long ago the last baby lay in this small bed. If they lived to grow up, if they got married, had children of their own. Then her treacherous thoughts slide sideways to Lan Huan and Lan Zhan in a way she's been fighting against for weeks, and she wonders how they'll grow up, who they'll marry, if they'll be happy. The pain in her gut is back, driving all breath from her body. She can picture her boys as clearly as if they're standing there before her, their little faces looking at her with the eager joy she only saw once a month, and she's actually reaching out for them when the illusion shatters, and she's alone. The pain slides through her body, ripping at her and tearing a cry from her throat. She's alone. She's never going to see her children again. In that moment, she hates Lan Chiren for throwing her out alive into a world without her sons, the Lan elders for being so caught up in their own strictures that they could ignore the crimes of one of their own and punish the one who finally stopped him, Qingheng Zhen for dragging her off to cloud recesses and shutting her away, visiting her only long enough to get her with children he wouldn't let her keep. Herself. She knows the Gu Salon would never have let her steal away their precious sectaires. They'd have killed her on the spot. She should have tried anyway. Now, she has nothing. She sits in the abandoned house for far too long, letting waves of anger and hatred and grief crash over her like a storm. But Liomehwe grew up in Zhushan, and she knows that even the fiercest of storms eventually ease. The night is dark when Liomehwe finally drags herself to her feet. There's nothing here for her, nothing to learn from these moss-soft walls, from this abandoned cradle in the middle of this watchful forest. Liomehwe puts her hand over her stomach, pressing in as if that might stop the pain, the grief. It doesn't. She walks out into the night. Weeks turn into months. She keeps walking west. The pouch Lan Chiren gave her contains a surprising amount of supplies and provisions, and money in the form of silver and coin. She uses this last sparingly, and only in the larger towns where a cultivator carrying such coin won't be remarked upon. She finally reaches the great river and buys herself passage on a boat to Yongmeng. It's a risk, straying so close to one of the five great sects, but she doesn't know anyone in Yongmeng. She's never met Yongmeng Jian sect leader Jian Fengmeng, or his wife, Yu Ziyan, and she figures that as long as she gives the Lotus Pier a wide berth, she'll be fine. That illusion is dashed 2 days later when she sees old Zhao Gui in the marketplace with a Jiang sect junior disciple, the youngster carrying the elder's parcels as the man peruses a book cart. As quickly as she can without drawing attention, Liomehwe moves behind a fruit cart, biting down a curse at her luck. Zhao Gui, the former sword teacher for the Zhushan Zhao sect, was one of her favorite instructors as a child, teaching her the path of the sword along with the other children. He had been one of the only ones who understood why Liomehwe wanted to leave Zhushan to wander as a cultivator, and gave her sage advice as she shouldered her pack before heading out into the world. She had been so young, Liomehwe reflects, hardly even 15 years old, and ready to fight for justice in a wild world. Zhao Gui seems so much older than when she last saw him. She can't let him see her. He must think her a disgrace, painted by the Lan sect as a foul murderer. Or, maybe, he's heard Lan Chiren's lies of her death. It doesn't matter. Liomehwe is dead to the world, to her former teacher as much as to her son's. Pressing a hand to her stomach, Lia Mehui lets out one long breath before walking away. She needs to keep heading west, where no one will know her. Maybe, then, the pain at losing everyone won't hurt so much. She continues west. It's nearly summer, and the roads around Yiling are hot and dry. It's wild country, this close to the edges of Qishan Wan territory, and she can travel by day and not be bothered. It's a novel thing, Lia Mehui finds, to walk in the daylight, to turn her face towards the sun and feel the burning winds across her cheeks. She wonders, as she often does these days, if her sons will ever walk these roads and feel the same sun on their cheeks. With a shake of her head, Lia Mehui continues on. She thinks she might stay for a few days in Yiling, use some of the preciously hoarded coins in her pouch for a soft bed instead of the hard ground. A woodcutter on the outskirts of the town pauses to tell her where to find an inn that has rooms for cultivators, and goes back to his work as Lia Mehui carries on down the road. Lia Mehui keeps her eyes straight ahead, not letting her attention drift north to where the burial mounds loom. All cultivators, whether rogue or sect-affiliated, know of the burial mounds and the resentful energy harnessed there. Some say that resentful energy contaminates the land around the burial mounds. The Qishan Wan have long since abandoned all efforts to tame the resentful energy, and everyone knows to stay away. Lia Mehui walks on. It's said that no sect cultivators will take night hunts around Yiling, but maybe that means the town could use the services of a rogue cultivator. They might even be willing to pay, or at least give her some food and a room for the night. It's almost a cheerful thought. The Yiling marketplace is bustling when Lia Mehui arrives. There are food stalls, merchants selling tender new vegetables and some spring fruits. Lia Mehui pauses by a woman selling hair ribbons, and, in a moment's indulgence, buys herself the most garish adornment she sees. Bright red with cheerful embroidery. It's the furthest thing from the solid white morning silks pushed upon her by the lawn. The old grandmother behind the stall offers to tie the ribbon into her hair, but Lia Mehui demurs. She wants to hold the fabric for a while, wants to see the red shining in the sun's light. As she nears the recommended inn, Lia Mehui pauses by an empty market stall to tuck the ribbon into her pocket. As she shakes her sleeve straight, the sound of a child's crying reaches her ears, along with that of a man's voice raised in anger. Her feet carry her forward before she realizes she's moving. Behind the inn, there's a dusty alley with a few bins and rough lumber. A man is trying to shove a small, hysterical child out through the back gate into the alley.
"Get out!" the man yells. "No one wants you here!"
The child, clad in homespun robes, shouts in incomprehensible sobs and tries to push back past the man into the courtyard.
"Go away!"
the man yells again. This time, he raises his hand to strike. Lia Mehui is there before his hand can fall. She grabs his wrist and pulls him sideways, just enough to send him off his balance.
"What are you doing?"
she demands as she dances backward before he can lash out at her. The man's face goes slack when he sees her. Or, rather, her sword. It takes him a moment to regain his wits, no doubt made more difficult by the flailing child battering at his shins.
"This one's parents left him with me and ran off," the man exclaims. "It's been almost a week. They're not coming back, and I'm not an orphanage."
"They'll come back,"
the child wails and kicks at the innkeeper's ankles. Seeing the man's anger, Lia Mehui moves in to catch the child. He lets himself be pulled back, still sobbing.
"It's been 6 days, the innkeeper snaps. "They're not."
"Mama said,"
the boy wails, and then flings himself at Lia Mehui. She catches him and lifts him up, his weight solid in her arms. He's no bigger than Lanjan. "Child," Lia Mehui says in the same tone of voice she used with her sons. The boy hiccups, but his cries cease. "What did your mother say?" He sucks in a breath.
"Mama said, stay here and we'll come back."
Then his face crumples again, and he collapses against Liu Mehui's shoulder, crying against her neck. Liu Mehui puts her sword hand over his back, holding him tight as she glares at the innkeeper. The man has the grace to look ashamed.
"It's been 6 days," he says again. "I've kept in longer than I should have. I can't... This isn't an orphanage."
Liu Mehui rocks the child as she takes stock of the last few minutes. Before, she had nothing in mind, nothing to guide her. Now, she has an armful of crying child and a sudden distaste for staying in this inn. "Tell me about the people who left this boy." "It's an order, and the man responds as such."
"Cultivators," he says with a shrug. "A man and a woman. Never gave their names. They brought the boy and stayed a few nights before they vanished. They just left him."
The boy glares at the innkeeper with his curious gray eyes.
"They're coming back!"
"Hush," Liu Mehui says, patting the boy's back. He smushes his face against her neck, and in spite of herself, something in her heart softens. "Describe them."
"The man was tall, black robes with purple accents,"
the innkeeper says reluctantly.
"The woman was short, shorter than you. She wore white and blue."
A thrill of fear slides down Liu Mehui's spine. Have the Lan found her so far west?
"No,"
she thinks the next moment. "That's ridiculous. She's heard no word of anyone looking for her, no one mentioning the Lan at all this far from Gusu." Still, she has to ask. "Did the woman wear a white ribbon across her forehead?" The innkeeper looks at her like she's mad.
"No."
He shrugs.
"They didn't say much. Just paid for a few nights' stay in advance. Took their meals in their room. And one night they went out and didn't come back."
Liu Mehui knows far too well what fates can befall cultivators out in the world. The life of a rogue cultivator is a rough one, and dangerous. They might have thought they were better positioned to go as a pair, but obviously not all night hunts go well. There's always the possibility that the two just left, abandoned their child, but Liu Mehui doubts it. She lifts her chin. "Did they leave their belongings? Clothing and the like?" The innkeeper hesitates long enough for the boy to pipe up with,
"Peony is in the stable! I saw her!"
The man goes red.
"They left a donkey," he mutters, "along with some clothing, bedrolls, blankets."
Liu Mehui holds in her temper. Surely a donkey can be considered adequate compensation for a few days of caring for a child. She bites out. The little boy curls his hand around the collar of her robe.
"No matter. He's no longer your responsibility."
She hefts the child in her arm. "Set aside the clothing. I'll return to examine it later."
"What are you going to do with him?"
the man asks, jerking his head toward the boy.
"Ask him questions. Away from here. If his parents return, tell them that we'll be back."
With that, Liu Mehui turns on her heel and marches down the alley, the boy light in her arms. He's quiet as Liu Mehui walks, her anger bleeding off as she heads back into the market square. She begs a cup of water and a small rag from a woman selling cherries, and sits the boy down on the steps of a closed temple. Now that he's stopped crying, Liu Mehui can see that he's an adorable child, with big gray eyes and a curving mouth better suited to smiles than tears. He's thinner than Lan Zhan, but she thinks he might be a little older than her own son. She pushes those thoughts away. "I'm going to wash your face," Liu Mehui says, hoping this won't set off more tears.
"Okay,"
the boy pipes up and turns his face trustingly towards her. She carefully wipes the tear stains from his cheeks, then re-wets the cloth and washes his face and neck before turning to his hands. He's not still like Lan Zhan, instead vibrating and shifting around even as he tries to stay seated. Liu Mehui smooths the hair back from his face. His ponytail is a mess, like he's been sleeping on it, so she turns him around on the step and unties the string holding his hair up. "Child," she says as she works, "what is your name?" The boy sniffs.
"This one is Wei Ying,"
he chirrups. Courtesy, Wu Xian. Then he nods, and it's all Liu Mehui can do not to pull on his hair. Hello, Wei Wu Xian. Liu Mehui untangles the worst of the knots before tying his hair back up in a top knot. For some reason, she dips her hand into her sleeve to pull out the red ribbon, securing it around his hair. She turns him around to look at her, and he grins up at her before clambering up onto her lap. It knocks the air from her lungs, how much this child trusts her. She shudders to think what might have happened to a child of such a gentle nature, had she not come along at that moment. Would the innkeeper have thrown him into the dirt? Would someone else have come to scoop him up? What if someone had meant harm to this precious child? He presses into her side again, his fingers curling around her collar. Who are you? He asks. Liu Mehui hesitates. She can't give this child her name, obviously, but he'll need to call her something. You can call me Auntie, she suggests. He makes a face. Nai Nai, he suggests, then dissolves into giggles. I am not your Nai Nai. I'm not old, she scolds him gently. He's so different from her boys, this little Wei Ying. All laughter and giggles, even after such a fright. She wonders if he understands that his parents are likely never coming back. Jia Jia, he says, and giggles harder. She pulls him more securely on her lap, waiting for his laughter to fade. Wei Ying, how old are you? He looked at his hands, then holds up three fingers on one hand and one on the other. Liu Mehui's heart aches just a little more. Just like her own Lan Zhan, but she can take comfort in knowing Lan Zhan is safe in Cloud Recesses with his brother, that Lan Qiren will spare nothing in keeping the Gusulan sect heirs safe. If this boy's mother is still alive, does she wonder what is happening to her son? If she's dead, if that's what kept her from returning for her child, were her last moments spent in frantic worry for her son? Liu Mehui puts her arm around Wei Ying's shoulders. The boy cuddles in against her, humming to himself as he watches the crowds go past. Wei Ying, she says after a while, do you know your parents' names?
Yes,
Wei Ying says with a nod.
Mama and Baba.
Of course. Did Liu Mehui know her parents' names when she was this age? She tries again. What does your mama call your Baba?
Wei Ying frowns dramatically, then says,
Wei Changsa.
Liu Mehui casts her mind back. Why does that sound familiar? She presses on. And what does your Baba call your mama? Wei Ying rests his head against her chest, wriggling his fingers around the edge of her robe.
Kangsa Sanran.
The air falls out of Liu Mehui's lungs. Kangsa Sanran is the best rogue cultivator of their generation. Trained by the immortal Baoshan Sanran, Kangsa Sanran's cultivation skills are known to surpass those of the finest sect cultivators. Liu Mehui met her once, years before, and was impressed with the woman's intensity and spirit. Liu Mehui cannot imagine Kangsa Sanran abandoning her son so callously. She fears that Kangsa Sanran and her husband Wei Changse have met the fate that so often befalls rogue cultivators, and there is a grief in her heart, a grief that not even the death of her husband could wrest from her. Oh, baby, she breathes, holding Wei Ying tight. This, however, garners a reaction she didn't expect. Wei Ying squeaks out a, "Hey!" and wrestles his way out of her arms, falls off her lap, and plants himself firmly on the ground. It's such a parody of a cranky old uncle that Liu Mehui can't help but smile.
I'm not a baby, I'm 4. I'm going to be a cultivator like my mama and my baba.
I know you are. Liu Mehui reaches out to brush a strand of hair back from Wei Ying's forehead. In that case, I should call you Wei Wuxian. Wei Ying nods, then he crowds back in against her knees.
Do you know where my mama is?
There's a real worry in his eyes, an understanding beyond his tender years. Liu Mehui runs her hand over his head, wondering what she should tell him. I don't. Wei Ying chews on his lip. Can you help me find her? Liu Mehui doesn't answer for a long moment. What is she doing? She can't go on a search for two lost cultivators. Not by herself, and certainly not with a child. If there's something out there that took down Kang San Sanran, what chance would Liu Mehui have? She's silent for too long. Wei Ying pulls himself up to his full height, his eyes sparking.
I'm going to go find Mama myself.
He nods firmly. Liu Mehui tries to think of what she would do with her own sons, but her mind goes blank. What does she know of her children? She may have given birth to them, but she only had them with her for one day every month. What were they like on those other days? What would they have done when they woke one day to find her gone? She swallows, grief for her lost sons sitting ill in her gut. She'll never know what happened with her children, what Lan Xiren would have told Lan Huan and Lan Zhan about their father's death and their mother's absence. She wonders what Kang Se Sanren would want Liu Mehui to do with Wei Ying. She doubts she'll ever find out. Instead, she leans forward, catching at Wei Ying's hand. Where are you going to go look for your parents? Wei Ying screws up his face in thought.
Mama said there was a thing.
A thing, Liu Mehui repeats.
Uh-huh.
Wei Ying nods emphatically.
A thing with horns.
He crooks his fingers up beside his temples. This isn't helping. Liu Mehui thinks back to her old rogue cultivator days, when she would roam the towns looking for evil to fight, and realizes with a sinking heart that she's going to find someone to talk to. Someone who might remember her. But, as Wei Ying looks up at her with trust and hope in his eyes, Liu Mehui finds that she can't turn her back and walk away from this little boy. She must try. Come on, Liu Mehui says, holding out her arms again. Wei Ying lets her pick him up and settle him on one hip. She can only faintly recall doing this with Lan Huan, walking him around on her hip while she was pregnant with Lan Zhan. It's a strange feeling when she pushes away. Let's go ask around.
Ask around,
Wei Ying echoes. He looks around, surveying all he sees.
Find Mama. Find Baba.
Girding herself, Liu Mehui goes to return the rag to the cherry seller. And if she asks an idle question about her friends, two rogue cultivators who recently came through town, it's easy enough for the woman to point her towards the local tailor, who tells a story about an unsettled trip through the woods south of town, and mentions that he was with the owner of a local wine shop at the time. By the time Liu Mehui finishes talking with the tailor and the wine shop owner, Wei Ying is gnawing on his hand. Liu Mehui buys him a snack at one of the last open food stalls, and sits with him on her knees as she thinks hard. From the description of the tailor, what he saw in the woods might be a deer yaoguai. Normally, any junior cultivator could handle such a creature. But things were strange this close to the burial mounds, and what might appear to be a normal haunting might swiftly turn into something deadly. Liu Mehui wouldn't expect Kang Se Sanren to fall into such a trap.
Yum, Wei Ying says as he tucks the last of his snack into his mouth. Can I have more?
Liu Mehui wipes the crumbs off his chin. We'll have dinner soon. Wei Ying blinks at her.
Then we'll find Mama?
Liu Mehui exhales. She doesn't know what to do. She could leave Wei Ying somewhere and go find the spot in the woods the tailor mentioned, but it's close to dark, and she's loath to leave this child alone so close to the burial mounds. If she's honest, she doesn't expect to find Kang Se Sanren and her husband alive, not after so long. Either they're dead, or they really did abandon their child at the inn and walk away. Liu Mehui doubts that. Wei Ying is smart and quick, a delight of a child, and she can't imagine anyone leaving him behind without a good reason. She is uncomfortably aware of the hypocrisy of her thoughts. Maybe she could have at least tried to get to Lan Wan and Lan Zhan, tried to take them with her, It doesn't matter that she knows every single Lan disciple would have stood between her and her boys, protecting the sect heirs with their lives. Part of her thinks she should have at least tried. Liu Mehui takes Weying back to the inn, pausing only long enough to take the bundle of clothing and goods left in Kangxi Sanren's room, and leaving word that she is taking Weying with her to keep him safe overnight. The innkeeper doesn't protest, and she doesn't mention the donkey again. Dusk falls as Liu Mehui makes her way across town to a guest house on the main road she passed on the way into Yiling. It's a rough place, with more than a few male patrons gathered in the dining room giving her a long look as she bargains for a room. The proprietor doesn't even glance at her, especially once he sees her silver. She's shown to a room on the upper floor, and supper and hot water swiftly arrive. The young woman carrying the water coos at Wei Ying, who gives her a smile in return, before she turns to Liu Mehui and says, "Your son is so adorable!" Liu Mehui's heart stops. Wei Ying doesn't seem to hear, by some stroke of luck. Liu Mehui manages to drag a smile over her face and says, "Thank you," without losing her composure. No one ever spoke to her on the adorable nature of Lan Huan or Lan Zhan, not even as infants. No one ever giggled with her over the boys. All she ever got, beyond one brief day a month with them, was a dry recitation of the children's accomplishments in their studies, delivered over her head by a straight-backed Lan Qiran when he left Lan Huan and Lan Zhan with her for their day. Now, she'll never have that chance to watch Lan Huan and Lan Zhan grow up. Liu Mehui pushes that thought away as the servant finally leaves, scooping rice and vegetables into a bowl for Wei Ying and settling down to watch him eat. The boy is hungry, but not starving. The innkeeper must have at least been feeding him these last 6 days. She sighs as she picks up her own bowl. If she can find Kangxi Sanren and Wei Chanze alive, then she'll happily hand over Wei Ying and continue on her way west. But she's pretty sure that's not going to happen. Not after so long. Which means Liu Mehui has a choice to make. Does she try to find someone to take Wei Ying in? Unless the world has changed much during the years of her confinement, very few people are on the outlook for orphans for anything beyond servitude. Even a child of such a famous cultivator might have a hard time finding a place. Does the boy have any other family? If his father had family, it would have been far safer for his parents to leave Wei Ying with them before leaving on a night hunt. As for his mother, well, everyone knows Bao Shen Sanren takes orphans up onto her misty mountain and they're never seen from again, save for Kangxi Sanren. Should Liu Mehui take Wei Ying to Bao Shen Sanren? She watches the child scrape at the bottom of his bowl, the tip of his tongue poking out as he chases the last grains of rice, and part of her rebels against the idea. Leaving the world for a solitary mountaintop is for immortals and old people, not little boys with their whole lives ahead of them. What else can she do? While she ruminates on the subject, Wei Ying puts his bowl down, stands up, and circles the table to crawl onto Liu Mehui's lap.
"Jiejie,"
Wei Ying says, tugging urgently on Liu Mehui's sleeve. "Can I have more?" Liu Mehui sighs again, but she hands him her own bowl and lets him scoop up its contents with his little spoon. "You can't call me Jiejie," she tells him. "I'm not your sister." Wei Ying wrinkles his nose.
"You're not old like aunties are,"
he says, and dives back into his meal. Liu Mehui pulls him more securely against her side, absently smoothing the hair back from his forehead.
"So you're Jiejie?"
Liu Mehui shakes her head, but his words stick in her mind as she finishes the meal. If the Lan do find out she's still alive, they'll start hunting for a female cultivator, alone. They won't be looking for a woman with a child, even less a woman traveling with a boy who calls her sister. As Liu Mehui places the plates outside the door, Wei Ying drags one of his parents' bags out of the corner and starts to burrow inside it. She watches him out of the corner of her eye as she fastens and wards the door closed against any intruder. Finally, Wei Ying emerges, triumphant, holding a soft toy that looks like it's been sewn together from rags. But the boy holds it tenderly, cradling it like a baby as he sits down on the bed. Lia Mehwe leans against the door and watches for a while as Weying pats the doll's head, telling it a rambling story about, she thinks, their day. She's not sure at what point in the day Weying saw a dragon, but he seems happy. And then we'll sleep, Weying continues as he tucks the doll under the blanket. And then we'll find Mama and Baba and have soup. Lia Mehwe sits down beside Weying.
Are you ready to sleep? She asks.
The boy nods. And then we'll go find Mama and Baba, he says, looking up at her with so much trust it scares her. She smiles, hoping that the child takes reassurance from it.
What's your doll's name?
She asks instead, touching the bundle of cloth.
Pishu,
Weying says immediately. Mama said I had to tell him all the best stories so he doesn't get hungry. He bends down and kisses the toy, then wriggles over to climb into Lia Mehwe's lap.
Can you tell me a story?
He implores. A story. Lia Mehwe puts her arms around Weying, not letting her heart break as he leans in against her, just like Lanzhan does. Like Lanzhan did. Let's see. Do you know the story of how Li Ji slayed the giant serpent? Weying stares at her, his eyes wide.
No,
he breathes.
Is it scary?
A little scary, Lia Mehwe says, but I think you'll like it. Weying nods.
Okay.
He wraps his hand around her collar.
I won't be scared.
Lia Mehwe tells him the story of the giant serpent and of brave Li Ji. Then, on Weying's pleas, repeats it three times in increasingly softer tones until the boy falls asleep in her arms. He doesn't wake as she puts him to bed beside his pishu and tucks the blankets around him. She should get up and do something, but instead she just sits beside little Weying and wonders what she's going to do. It's long past the hours when voices sound in the hall down below. Lia Mehwe has spent hours under the lamplight examining everything in Kangsa Sanren and Wei Chan's bags, and what she finds is troubling. It's clear that the two cultivators had been living with very limited resources for a very long time. Their spare robes, one set black and purple for a tall, broad-shouldered person, and the other a dusty light gray for the short woman Lia Mehwe remembers in Kangsa Sanren, are threadbare and repeatedly mended. Weying's clothes are of a better quality, as if his parents had made the decision to spend what little coin they had on their son. And, Lia Mehwe thinks, when the boy outgrows them, fabric of this quality will be easier to sell or exchange for bigger robes. Kangsa Sanren's robe has a weight in the sleeve that Lia Mehwe manages to tease open. That's where she finds their cash, a few bits of silver, an entry token with Yunmen Jeng lotus carved on it, an ivory hair stick, and a small jade pendant, carved into the shape of a crane. Small riches, carefully hidden. Lia Mehwe runs her thumb over the jade crane as she looks at Wei Ying, sleeping across the room. If the boy's parents had made the decision to run off and leave their son behind, they never would have left these precious items. Every piece of evidence tells Lia Mehwe that Kangsa Sanren and Wei Changse plan to come back for their belongings, and for their son. With care, Lia Mehwe tucks the treasures back into the sleeve of the robe, then she rolls the cultivator's clothing up into a package, secures it with a spare sash, and puts it into her Changkun pouch. She leaves Wei Ying's clothing out for the morning. She should get some sleep, get ready for the next day. But she can't shake the memory of how long some of the men below looked at her as she had bargained for a room. And so, Lia Mehwe sits on the floor mat, her sword laid out before her, and keeps watch over Kangsa Sanren's sleeping son. Slowly, the night passes. Outside the window, the early summer sun peeks over the hills. From below comes the sound of the inn servants starting their day. Through it all, Lia Mehwe sits and meditates. She's almost at peace when little Wei Ying suddenly sits up, startled awake.
Mama?
He exclaims, nearly falling out of bed.
Mama?
Lia Mehwe shakes off her meditation. Your mama isn't here, she reminds him as gently as she can. Wei Ying's lip trembles, then he starts to cry. It takes Liu Mehui a moment to unfold herself. When she gets to the bed, Wei Ying flings himself at her and sobs incoherently against her neck. She can't even offer him any hope that he'll see his parents again. So she settles in, rocking Wei Ying as he cries himself out. She sings a lullaby she remembers from her own childhood, about a white bird that sings its lonely song at night. Did she ever sing this song for her own sons? She can't remember. She'd only had Lan Wan for a month following his birth, left alone as much as the Lan elders had dared. When Lan Qiran had arrived in the threshold of the Qingxia, Liu Mehui had thought he'd come to mark the occasion of Lan Wan's first month with her. Instead, he'd taken her son away. She'd been better prepared with Lan Zhan. She knew she wouldn't be allowed to keep him. When she was pregnant, feeling his little kicks inside her womb, she whispered to him in the dark that she couldn't raise him, that she couldn't allow herself to love him. Terrible things for a mother to tell her unborn child. And useless, it turned out, for once she held little Lan Zhan in her arms, born a month early and so small, her heart overflowed with love and protection and mine, mine, mine. It hadn't mattered any more than it had with Lan Huan. 1 month later, Lan Qiran brought 2-year-old Lan Huan to meet his brother, pay his respect to his mother, then he took both of the boys with him when he left. That day was the closest Liu Mehui ever came to murdering her brother-in-law.
It's not fair,
Liu Mehui thinks as she tries to soothe Wei Ying's broken sobs. Parents, unable to raise their sons. Slowly, Wei Ying pulls back and looks up at her.
Jijia,
he whispers.
I want Mama and Baba.
I know. Liu Mehui kisses the top of his head, smoothing down his hair. Ai Ying, you've been so brave for so long. You need to be brave for just a little while longer.
Okay,
he says miserably, and stays huddled in her arms until one of the inn staff taps on the door and announces that she has the morning's hot water. Wei Ying refuses to be put down, so Liu Mehui carries him as she lets the woman into the room. This woman is older, bustling and no-nonsense, and on seeing Wei Ying's teary cheeks, admonishes him to be a good boy and listen to his mother. Liu Mehui holds his breath, but Wei Ying just nods and hides his face against her shoulder again.
Now, will you be wanting breakfast brought up?
The woman asks as she carries the hot water through to the little tub behind the privacy screen. Liu Mehui has plans for the day, and none of them involve sticking around and yelling for longer than she has to. She turns down the woman's offer, but asks for the kitchen to pack a breakfast and lunch for her and the boy. The woman nods, all business, pinches Wei Ying's cheek, and leaves to carry on with her day. Liu Mehui hardly has to convince Wei Ying to get into the tub. The boy loves the water, insisting on scrubbing himself all over with the washcloth. Then he insists on drying himself with the towel, although Liu Mehui does have to help as he gets bored halfway through and runs naked across the room, dripping water all over the floor. Liu Mehui manages to wrestle him into his clean robes, and in no time has his hair tied up with the red ribbon. With that, all there is left to do is bundle away his old robes and the ragdoll pishu into her qiankan pouch, stow that in her sleeve, pick up her sword, and hold out her free hand to Wei Ying. He takes it immediately.
Are we going to go find Mama and Baba now?
He asks hopefully.
We're going to leave now, Liu Mehui says instead, and we'll have breakfast as soon as we're out of town.
Breakfast!
Wei Ying chirrups, bouncing in place. He sings to himself as Liu Mehui guides him downstairs, ignoring everyone to look around the inn's main room, transformed in the early morning light. Liu Mehui exchanges some coins for the packed lunch, picks Wei Ying up, and without any fanfare slips out into the streets of Yiling. Wei Ying is content to hold on to her neck and make observations about the world as Liu Mehui walks them down the main street, towards the road south out of town. The tailor said that he'd encountered the oddity a few miles away, where the road strays near the towering rock walls to the first warning sign of the burial mounds. As the rock walls come into sight, Wei Ying grows quiet.
What's that?
He asks after a long pause. The burial mounds, Liu Mehui tells him. There, she sees the curiously twisted tree the wine shop owner mentioned. They must be getting close to the spot. Wei Ying puts his arms around her neck.
I don't like it.
Neither do I. Liu Mehui hitches the boy up on her hip and keeps going. Most ghosts in Yaogui are quiet this early in the morning. She hopes she can figure out what's going on, see if there's any sign of Kangxi Sanren and Wei Changse, before the ghosts begin to stir. Wei Ying stays quiet as Liu Mehui walks on. She can feel the pulse of resentful energy in the air, like the dull throb of a distant waterfall. With every step, she wonders what she's doing, bringing a child into this place. She should have left him at the inn, with some money and instructions on what to do if she didn't return. Yinling straddles the board of the Qishan Wen and Yunmenjing. Liu Mehui could have word sent to Jian Fengmiang. He might know why Kangxi Sanren had a Lotus Pier entry token. Might know if there's anyone to take in Wei Ying. But she didn't. Instead, she's carrying a child closer to the burial mounds in search of any sign of his likely dead parents. Maybe being in near isolation for 7 years broke something in her head. Maybe she should turn back now, take the child to safety. Maybe... The wind changes, and Liu Mehui stops. Decay lies on the air, the decay of a battlefield, of sun-baked blood and rotting flesh and putrefaction, not the long-dead charnel stink of a graveyard. Death. Recent death. Liu Mehui tries to swallow and gags on the air.
That's bad,
Wei Ying cries, burying his face in Liu Mehui's shoulder. Right, Wei Ying. Liu Mehui tries to center herself. She must make sure the child is safe. The best way to do that would have been to leave him behind, but it's too late for that. She'll have to do the best she can. Swiftly, Liu Mehui retreats down the road to a spot by the twisted tree, surrounded by flat, sun-baked earth. She sets Wei Ying down and reaches into her sleeve, pulling out her Qiangkun pouch. Wei Wuxian, she says seriously, I need you to be very brave for me. He puts a finger in his mouth.
Yes, Jiejie,
he says. She hands him the pouch. I need you to take care of this for me. He takes the bag, staggering a little under its weight as he crouches down. Now, you have to stay very still for just a few minutes. Swiftly, Liu Mehui sketches a protection array around Wei Ying, pushing a little too much energy into it. The ground around Wei Ying lights up with power. Nothing will be able to break through this array to get to Wei Ying for at least a quarter xi. Of course, any such protection comes at a cost. Liu Mehui sways on her feet, suddenly faint.
Jiejie!
Wei Ying shouts an alarm, which drags her back. She shakes her head and makes herself stand straight. It's all right, she says. Ai Ying, it's all right. He bites his finger.
Are you sure?
Yes. She's running out of time. I'll be right back. Stay there. Then she turns and runs down the road in the direction of the stench. She has to hurry. Nothing can harm Wei Ying in the protection array, but it only lasts for a short time. She has to find out the cause of that smell, then get back to Wei Ying. The smell intensifies as she nears a fork in the road. A small indentation in the grass to the east side of the south fork seems slightly out of place, and on instinct, Liu Mehui draws her sword. Wind ruffles the tops of the dried grass, but it's not enough to hide the faint, unsettling buzz of insects. Too many insects. Liu Mehui breathes shallowly as she walks on. She's prepared, she tells herself. She's ready for anything as she crests the ridge and looks down and... It takes a moment for her eyes to focus, for her brain to piece together what she sees. Then she's turning to the side as her stomach heaves. She spits up a mouthful of bile before sucking in air, and then she gags again at the stench of rot in the air. It's them. Well,
It's what's left of them. It's been over 6 days. 6 hot days baking under the ailing sun. The bodies lay broken and bloating, oozing gore from old wounds. The man's body lies face down, but the woman's face is towards Liumehwe, and insects cluster around what had been her eyes, and Liumehwe forces down a scream. She had known Kangsa Sanren, and now the woman lies dead at her husband's side under an unforgiving sky, and their son... Weiying has no one now. No one but Liumehwe. Liumehwe should get back to the boy, take him far away from this place. His parents are beyond help. She's turning to go when she sees a silver gleam beside Kangsa Sanren's body. Her sword. Liumehwe stops. She's running out of time, but a cultivator's sword is their most valued possession. The idea of some stranger finding Kangsa Sanren's sword, of taking it, dishonoring it, she moves before she can think better of it. The stench is overpowering this close-up, and the sound of the insects buzzing makes her want to vomit again. She manages to pick up Kangsa Sanren's sword and the discarded scabbard by the woman's feet. Finding Wei Cheng's scabbard is easy, but his sword is trapped underneath his body. Liumehwe has to yank hard to free the sword. A swarm of insects rush in as fresh liquid oozes out of the wound, along with a smell so vile her eyes water and she dry heaves as she runs from the clearing, stopping to lean against a tree to gain her balance. This was no natural death. Both Kangsa Sanren and Wei Cheng'se had their swords out, their bodies showing signs of an attack. Not wild animals. The bodies haven't been eaten or scavenged. Whatever it was had a long reach, and either claws or a blade. Liumehwe's skin crawls at the idea that whatever killed these two cultivators might still be close. Might be watching. She has to get back to Wei Ying. Now. She turns to go, but hesitates. Putting her back to the tree, she sketches a hasty bow to the bodies. "I found Wei Ying," she tells the corpses. "I will ensure that he is safe, and that he is raised well." There's nothing in the clearing to suggest that the spirits of Kangsa Sanren or Wei Cheng'se have lingered, but Liumehwe hopes it's enough to prevent them from walking the land in search of their son. Then Liumehwe turns and runs as fast as she can with 3 swords in her arms. She can't fly in her sword, not with the spiritual energy of 2 other swords so close, so she keeps running. The weeks on the road have helped her regain her strength after her long confinement, but she hasn't run like death was on her heels since she ran from the lawn after slaying Lan Ji. Her breath catches in her side and she nearly turns an ankle, but after an eternity of running, she's over the crest of the hill and she can see Wei Ying, still waiting patiently in the array carved into the dirt. He sees her, too, and stands up to wave his hand frantically in her direction.
"Hi!" he yells. "Hi, Jieje! I waited!"
Liumehwe skids to a halt a few feet from the boy. She drops her armful as gently as she can, then goes to the array and, with a flick of the wrist, unlocks the outer thread of energy. From there, it's easy to run a hand over the marks in the dirt to dissipate the rest of the array. "Oh, Ai Ying," Liumehwe says, holding out her arms. Wei Ying jumps at her, his little hands clutching at the fabric of her robes. "Oh, little one."
"I did what you told me," Wei Ying tells her proudly. "I waited. I was brave."
Liumehwe holds him tight for a long moment, then sits back. Wei Ying beams up at her, so happy, and her heart snaps with the knowledge that he's a child without his parents. Well, she's a mother without her children. They're going to have to make it work. "You did very well," she tells him.
"And I kept this!"
Wei Ying scrambles back over to the array to pick up the Tiankun pouch.
"For you!"
Liumehwe takes the pouch. "You did well," she says again. Wei Ying beams, then goes bashful and hides his face in his hands. Liumehwe lets herself sag.
She needs to get away from here. Take Wei Ying and get far away before whatever killed his parents turns its attention on them. But first, she has to get the other swords bundled away, so she can fly with hands and golden core unencumbered. Ai Ying. Liu Mehui opens the pouch and reaches in, calling for the traveling blanket Lan Qiren thought to pack for her. Wei Wuxian, I need to do something. Can you be still for just a little longer? Wei Ying nods at her, eyes wide. Good. Liu Mehui pulls out the blanket, then a spare cloth, a piece of fine fabric with Guselan clouds embroidered on it. It's ridiculous, something she can never use while people are around to see. It'll have to do to clean the swords of Wei Ying's parents. Feeling every one of her 26 years, Liu Mehui gets to her feet and returns to where she dropped the swords in the dirt. Kangxi Sanren's sword has dark blood dried on the blade. Liu Mehui cleans it off as best she can before returning the sword to its scabbard. As she reaches for Wei Chansa's sword, she realizes that Wei Ying stands beside her, his finger in his mouth as he stares at the swords. The air is heavy as the boy stares and stares. Finally, he lifts his eyes to Liu Mehui. "That's Mama's sword," he whispers. "And that's Baba's sword." Liu Mehui holds her spine straight. "Yes." Wei Ying chews on his finger for a little while. "Where's Mama and Baba?" Liu Mehui places the bloodied handkerchief on the ground. "Wei Wuxian, your parents..." She swallows. "Your parents went away."
"Where to?"
Wei Ying whispers.
"To a place far away," Liu Mehui says. She wonders what lies Lan Qiren told to Lan Huan and Lan Zhan about why she was suddenly gone from their lives.
"They didn't want to go. They didn't want to leave you. But they didn't have a choice."
Still, Wei Ying stares. "Can we go find them?"
"No." She winces at the finality in her own words. "We can't go find them now. But you'll see them again, Wei Wuxian. One day."
Wei Ying doesn't say anything, so Liu Mehui takes up the cloth again to wipe down Wei Changse's sword. The nauseating gore on the tip of the blade has picked up a layer of dirt from the road, and Liu Mehui nearly gags again as she wipes the metal as clean as she can. Later, once they're safe, she'll find a whetstone and sword oil and properly take care of these blades before wrapping them up a final time. When Wei Ying is older, she'll ask him what he wants to do with the swords. As Liu Mehui gives Wei Changse's sword a final polish, Wei Ying moves. He goes over to where Kangxi Sanren's sword lies and sits, picking up the sheathed blade and trying to hug it to his chest.
"Mama, come back,"
he whispers.
The air moves, and with it, a curl of resentful energy drifts by.
Quick as a flash, Liu Mehui shakes out the blanket and places Wei Changse's sword onto it.
"Wei Wuxian, give me the sword."
"I want Mama!"
Wei Ying cries, tears gathering in his eyes. They don't have time for this. Liu Mehui has to get Wei Ying away from the burial mounds, away from whatever killed his parents.
"Wei Wuxian, I need you to put your mother's sword beside your father's. Right here."
Wei Ying glares at her.
"Why, Jia?"
Growing desperate, she says, "So the swords can have a nap together." Reluctantly, Wei Ying loosens his hold on the sword. As soon as it's out of his grasp, Liu Mehui takes it to place it beside its fellow, then swiftly wraps up the blanket, ties it with the ribbon from her sleeve, shoves the bundle into the Changkun pouch, shoves that into her sleeve, and then is on her feet and picking up Wei Ying. In an instant, she's on her sword, Wei Ying clutched tight against her chest as she pushes them east. There's an invisible snapping, then what might have been the roar of the wind as the air itself claws at them. Liu Mehui doesn't look back as she pours as much of her spiritual energy as she can into getting little Wei Ying away to safety. The ground moves fast under them, rocky, barren grounds with no roads. She'll fly as far as she can before touching down, then maybe they can make it the rest of the way on foot. If they can get to the road to Jianling, they'll be safe.
Jia-jia, Weiying says after a long time in the air. Jia-jia, I miss Mama and Baba.
I know you do.
Why did they have to leave?
Liu Mehui bends her knees to take the brunt of some air turbulence. Sometimes, in life, we have to leave the people we love.
I won't!
Weiying buries his face against her neck, wet with cold tears.
I'll never leave!
Liu Mehui thinks of her children, thinks of her parents, of her grandparents, of all the people in her life who she's had to leave behind. Life doesn't work like that, Aiying.
It will!
Liu Mehui sighs. There's a hint of rain on the horizon, and she thinks they may be far enough away from the burial mounds to safely take to ground again. She lands, sets Weiying on his feet, and tucks her sword back into its scabbard. Let's walk, Wei Wuxian. Weiying takes her hand and walks with her down the road. It's a narrow path, barely more than an indentation in the grass, but it leads away from the burial mounds and from Yiling.
Jia-jia?
Yes?
Weiying swings her hand. I miss Mama and Baba.
I know.
Jia-jia?
Yes?
I'm hungry.
Are you? Liu Mehui pauses to dig the food parcels out of her pouch. Let's see what the innkeeper gave us. She gives Weiying a steamed bun to chew on as they walk. The thought of food still nauseates her as she thinks of what happened to Kangsa Sanren and Wei Changsa. It's a fate that can befall any rogue cultivator. She's escaped death twice now. She likely won't be as lucky a third time. As they walk, Liu Mehui considers Weiying. He's steadily making his way through the bun, holding it in both hands as he concentrates. He's so young. He needs someone to love him, someone to protect him, to teach him cultivation and manners and writing, all those things her family and her masters did for her. Then Weiying looks up at her, cheeks full, and he gives her a ghost of a smile.
Jia-jia, he says after he swallows. Jia-jia, where are we going?
As he says it, he reaches up to slip his tiny hand into hers. She thinks of the boy's lost parents, of her own children almost as distant from her, and says, We're going to find some place where we can both be safe, Wei Wuxian.
Okay, Jia-jia.
Together, Liu Mehui and Weiying walk east. The end. Thanks for listening.